Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Ooh, yeah. And this is Halloween. Halloween reality, which is its own one.
Yes. On and, I think we'll find out, below the surface.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. We're going to talk about The Halloween Tree by Ray Bradbury.
Mm-hmm.
Not our first Bradbury. I'm going to have trouble today. Not our first Bradbury on this podcast.
No, we've had two, right?
We've had two others. I know we talked. Oh, we did. Fahrenheit 451, I forgot about. Mm-hmm. But we also talked about Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yep. We're fans.
Probably going to say the very same things. I should have reviewed those so I don't repeat myself. But man, this guy's good.
I don't think you could say that too many times.
Yes,
man,
yes.
This guy is good. And he's so poetic while he's just writing his prose. He's got a real specific style that, I don't know, to me you can't really pin it down, but when you read it, you know him.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. I wanted to read from Goodreads, our good friend, the Kurt Jester.
Mm-hmm.
His entire review. I'm going to read the whole thing.
Okay.
So wonderful. The lyrical prose keeps you captivated throughout. You almost become a child again when engaging this story. That's
wow.
The whole review. Yeah. And it's perfect.
Yeah.
Can I like it twice? So,
well,
no, it's just so,
that,
so perfect.
So yeah. I guess we're done.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah.
But it really is perfect. And that's why The Halloween Tree is just one of those things. You know, it's not unlike The Christmas Carol. I read mm-hmm. The Christmas Carol probably every other year, just because, you know, I'm in the mood for it all the time, right? But
Slacker.
This
if
is the same. Marley was dead to begin with. Yeah. And yes. And Marley is mentioned in this, which just makes me so happy.
Yes.
Yeah. He had a Marley knocker on a door.
Well, it's his nod to what he's going to do.
Yeah.
It's foreshadowing.
Exactly. I love it. I love it. So, yeah, so here's an example. You mentioned this in your review of Goodreads, and I had highlighted the exact same thing from the very beginning. And it was the afternoon of Halloween, and all the houses shut against a cool wind, and the town full of cold sunlight. But suddenly, the day was gone. Night came out from under each tree and spread.
Mm.
Just love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so evocative of you. It's painting these pictures in your mind, which is why it's poetic, even though it's not poetry.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And well, to even add to it and make it even better is the audiobook version by Bronson Pinchot, who read it out loud, and man, it was good. So
yeah,
this time
amazing.
I had it in my ear and I had the text in front of me at the same time this time
Ooh.
Through. And, man, it was neat.
A 3D really experience.
3D, yeah.
Kind of.
you know, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the first time I encountered this story was actually the movie. I don't know if you've even seen the movie.
Yes, I remember you recommended it.
Yeah, I recommended it. It's an animated movie. And Leonard Nimoy is Mound Shroud. He's just great. And,
perfect.
Yeah. And the story is different, of course. You know, it's got a lot of the same themes. Instead of eight boys running around, there's a group of four. I think there was one girl and two boys. And then Pip would be the fourth.
Okay.
If I remember that right, I hope I'm remembering it correctly. I didn't all rewatch it. But there weren't eight boys. It was a small group. And Mount Shroud.
Yeah, and Leonard Nimoy's voice would actually be perfect for how I think of Mound Shroud. Although Bronson Pinchot did a really great job, although some of his whispering was too whispery.
Really? Oh, I was so enthralled by that. Oh, I loved it. What were you doing at the same time? And I did have the text in front of me, but sometimes he'd just go there and it'd be like, oh, wow, that's chilling.
Well, I think it was because maybe I was listening to it through speakers and not through earbuds.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And so the whispering was so low that I couldn't hear what he was saying.
Yeah.
That was my only problem.
Gotcha.
And I saw other people commenting on that on Audible. So maybe it just depended on how you were listening. But it is a wonderful reading. And the thing I like about it is it comes across so poetically, as I've said, one way. And then when you read it, just watching the way the words go together on the page, I wound up with the Kindle version. Because at this time of year, it's in great demand from the library. And so you have these great illustrations that go with it. And, you know, there's just also something about reading the words.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the version I had as well. Together. So I think that's a Penguin version. Random House Penguin. It's all like one big company now.
Well, I did look at this available on the Kindle, and I thought I felt kind of guilty for buying it because I know how adamantly Ray Bradbury was against ebooks for his entire life. He refused to let his books be ebooks, and then he dies and his estate or relatives or whoever go, sure, sure. Roll that cash truck up right here to the front door. So
yeah. But I remember you saying that. We talked about that in the Fahrenheit 451, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Because, that was so ironic. Reading Fahrenheit 451 on a Kindle or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, so the book that you're talking about, and I did have the same Kindle version when I was going through it this time, is illustrated by Gris, G-R-I-S, Grimley.
What a great name.
G-R-I-M-L-Y. Yeah. It's like perfect. Yeah. You often wonder, you know, he said, well, my name is Gris Grimley. What should I do for a living?
Well, I was just wondering if it was, if it was a made up name.
Yeah. But it is perfect. It is perfect.
Yes, it is. Definitely is. So for anybody who hasn't read it, for one thing, I'm always surprised that no one's ever heard of it, it seems like. It should be better known, and I don't know why it isn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure why either. It's perfect. You know, it's family-friendly stuff, and, you know, it's, I don't know. It captures the mood of Halloween that I had growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, who knows why.
Well, and it's very Bradbury-esque in terms of it really appreciates boys' friendships together. It appreciates the adventure of available in a small town for this band of boys. And is it maybe his only book that he wrote for an age group that wasn't adult? And maybe that's why just don't think of it. Yeah, but I'd mention it, and, you know, my own children are like, what? And she's going, oh, I failed you. I'm sorry, I'm a terrible mother. Well, look, here you are in my household, and here's the Kindle book. Sit down right now and read it. No, I'm not kidding. I'll bring food.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
I love it.
Anyway.
I love it.
So yeah. What's it about?
Well, what's it about? It takes place, of course, on Halloween, and there's a group of 9 boys, actually, who are ready to go trick-or-treating with each other. So they kind of run around town gathering each other up. And it's just beautiful language. You know, this one's dressed as a skeleton. This one's a gargoyle. This one's a mummy. Oh, it's just neat. Mm-hmm. And they're all running around town. And then they get to the boy's house. The boy who's kind of the center of the group. You get the feeling that he's the leader of everybody. And his name is Pip. They call him Pip. And, but Pip is not well, he's not feeling well, and, they can't believe it. You know, how can we possibly go on without, you know, the king of the hill here? So, Pip says, hey, I'm going to meet you guys, at the first house. He sort of tells them where to go. He says, I'm going to go get my stuff on and I'll meet you there. But, he does meet him there, but sort of not as expected.
And the house they go to is like the best haunted seeming house ever.
Right. Yep. They get there and there's a tree outside with little jack-o'-lanterns all over it.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's a super spooky house.
Yep. Yep. And I'm trying to remember when Pip shows up in that particular scene. But So they are there, and there's someone else there named Moundshroud, who they meet this person.
Yeah.
Who takes them on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
On the tail of a kite, which I loved. I had forgotten this, that Mr. Moundshroud makes this kite.
Yeah, and he makes the kite out of posters that are on the side of a barn, and the posters are like from carnivals, and the posters have, you know, their little shredded, torn corners and centers of these posters, and there's just like an eye of a lion or something, and and all these animal parts that are depicted on these posters on the side of this barn. And they make, you know, he tells them to make a kite, and they make a kite out of it, and it just kind of becomes alive.
But it doesn't have a tail, and they all have to leap and hold on to each other. And I'd forgotten that, and I was reading it thinking, how did I forget this? This is so perfect, and they should drag a kite down, but each boy that goes on makes it fly even a little higher, and they have to always be together.
Yeah.
And what they're going to do is they're going to find Pip. Because Pip has kind of mysteriously been whirled away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is they wind up on a trip through time on Halloween to see what Halloween was like in all these other places and where all our Halloween customs come from that are rooted in actual history.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a really great way to not only look at this history, but kind of put yourself into the place of these people and what they would have experienced or imagined or told each other, the stories they would have told each other. I mean, because one of my favorites is the first place they wind up is Egypt, with the people leaving food on their porches for their family.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe do they put it on the table so the family will come in?
Yeah, the table. And isn't that the place where some of them had a mummy in their house and they would...
Yes.
Take it out and put it next to the table and.
Right.
Yeah, fascinating.
And then, so
is
what
that
happens?
True information. I'm assuming that there's something to it. Yeah.
I assume if we don't think it's true now, that it was true when he wrote it. That's what folklorists or archaeologists or whatever would have said. Because the stuff as he gets closer to our time, it's closer to what I, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feel like was true at the time or thought to be true at the time he wrote the book. And then so what happens is as they go through time, they're still looking for Pip.
Right.
And Pip will be going, they'll hear his voice or they'll see a clue and they'll whirl away to somewhere else. And by the end, I guess we don't have to worry about spoilers for this book so much, but still to try to preserve some of the mystery for people is they wind up in a spot that you would not expect that is current day. And it's a wonderful, beautiful parallel to the first scenes we see in Egypt. It's full circle. And I know that I was enchanted when I learned about this practice myself. So I felt like it was another place where Bradbury and I were kind of connecting.
Yeah.
So.
Very nice. Very nicely put.
Oh, thank you.
You bet. You bet. So, yeah, if we don't worry too much about spoilers.
Move on.
Move on. As you were describing the kite, this is another one of my favorite parts. It says, whoosh, the kite purred with 1,000 animal whispers. Whang, the kite rope strummed the wind. Hush, said the entire thing. And the wind flew them high across the stars, leaving Moundshroud to look up with awe at his contraption, his kite, his boys. Wait, he shouted. Don't wait. Come on, the boys yelled. Moundshroud ran along the grass to seize the scythe. His cape fluttered, taking air, making wings until he also, very simply, took off and soared. I love that. This is such great language.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Makes me want to write like that. You're like, oh yes.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't love it? I mean, because one of my favorite parts is also about the kite. The kite flew. The boys hung down from the kite in a fine lizard's tail, now weaving, now looping, now snapping, now gliding. They yelled with delight. They shrieked with in-gasped, out-gasped terror. They rode across the moon in an exclamation point. They soared over hills and meadows and farms. They saw themselves reflected in dusky, moon-bright streams, creeks, rivers. They brushed down over ancient trees. The wind, stirred by their passing, shook down whole government mints of coins, leaves, bright showering to the black-grassed earth. They flew over the town and thought, "Oh, look up! See, here we are, your sons!" And thought, "Oh, look down! There, somewhere, are our mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, teachers. Hey, here we are! Oh, someone see us, or you'll never believe!" So.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Just wonderful.
Yes, clearly we could read the whole book to you. Not as
chapter
well as
chapter 9. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And then, yeah, and then, you know, he starts to talk about Halloween, and he starts to talk about commonalities between cultures and things. So actually in chapter 9, he says, lesson number 1 about Halloween, this is Mound Shroud. Osiris, son of the earth and sky, killed each night by his brother Darkness. Osiris slain by Autumn, murdered by his own night blood. And then he says, so it goes in every country, boys. Each has its death festival, having to do with seasons. Skulls and bones, boys, skeletons and ghosts. In Egypt, lads, see the death of Osiris, king of the dead. Gaze long. And that's sort of the first paragraph that he's starting to bring together these things throughout the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of, I guess I would call it some type of a point or a theme. He's sort of talking about the, how everything is connected into one.
Well, yeah, how people understand things and explain them, I think, is part of it. Maybe.
Right. Maybe so. Yeah.
Although he does leave it more open than just a basic, here's the explanation of why people would have made this up.
Oh, sure.
You know, he doesn't do that. Well, I'm just saying, just in case anybody's thinking it's like that, it's, I can't remember what I read where somebody was talking about, it might have been Tolkien in one of his professorial essays or C.S. Lewis or somebody like that saying, yeah, the farmers heard the thunder, the Norse farmers heard the thunder, and they thought of, would it have been Odin or whoever and his Thor, I guess, Thor and his hammer.
Right.
And they're like, but which came first? You don't know. You know, we can look back and go, this is what makes sense to us. But the truth is that people are more complicated than that. And you can understand on the one hand, something is a natural phenomenon, while on the other hand, it's invested with deeper meaning for you.
Yeah.
And that's part of how God created the world and created us to think about it.
Right. And it is one of the things that, you know, is used against us by atheists, you know, where they talk about, well, religion is just immature science. That's what it is. And that's it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a complete misunderstanding.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have to admit that it's part of a story of some things. Where some people have said, hey, this is why this, and perhaps they were incorrect. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, but but it's just that's not the full story. It's not even useful in any way, really.
Well, yeah. Well, for one thing, to refer something spiritual to science is not very useful. And the other thing is to act as if science is the end all and be all because we know so much is not useful in this particular context.
Mm-hmm.
Because think how many things that people come up with these hypotheses and theories for that seem very good, and then they get disproven. And pretty soon it's like, and the ones I can think of that seem to filter down to us the most are things like about diet. And so it's like, oh, don't eat butter. Now it's like, yeah, butter's fine. Oh, let's eat the whole grain, or, you know, the carb-heavy diet because of this. You know, I think that was in the 80s. And now it's like, no, you know what they used to say in the old days about too much bread makes you fat? Yeah, that's really a thing. So science can be wrong too. It's a process of discovery, just like religion is a process of discovery, because it's personal and societal. Mm-hmm. Yep. But it's just different.
Yeah. Again, well put.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'm just tripping over myself today.
Well, I'm just, no, but you're bringing up these ideas that I hadn't really thought about in connection with this book. So
yeah, that's good. Yeah.
It's a team effort.
It is.
We're both on the tail of that kite together.
That's right. Whipping around, making right. exclamation points in the, on the moon.
Right. That's right. Yeah. If they would let a girl on there.
Yeah, of course they would. Yeah.
Well, these days they would.
These days they would, right.
That's kind of a boy's adventure. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. So the next part that I have highlighted actually starts to mention Christianity. And it's not that far after that. It's in chapter 13. And we're in, I forgot how this was pronounced in the audiobook, but it's Samhain, Samhain. Oh.
Yeah,
so we're in Ireland, I believe.
Yeah, I liked this chapter too.
Very, very much. Talking about Druid priests and Roman captains. And so it says here, the Druid priests bled in the grass as the boys watched, and the Roman captain prowled the dead fires, kicking the holy ashes. Here we shall build our temples to our gods. The soldiers lit new fires and burned incense before golden idols, which they set in place. But no sooner lit than a star shone in the east. On far desert sands, to camel bells, three wise men moved. The Roman soldiers lifted their bronze shields against the glare of the star in the sky, but their shields melted. The Roman idols melted and became shapes of Mary and her son. And then there's a little bit more, and then it says, Moundshroud says to the boys, "Aye, boys, see, gods following gods. The Romans cut the Druids, their oaks, their god of the dead, bang, down, and put in their own gods, eh? Now the Christians run and cut the Romans down. New altars, boys, new incense, new names." And then the wind blew the altar candles out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So what's he saying there? You know.
So that seems to equate all the religions are equal to each other because they're just ways to try to connect or to understand things.
Yeah. So it's the old Joseph Campbell. Everything's equal. You know, this is all attempts by us humans to explain the transcendent to each other. When the transcendent seems to really exist, but we really don't have words, so therefore we invent myths. And then you have the Tolkien and Lewis who basically said, hey, this is the myth that's true. You know, in the beginning was the Word, and, you know, the Word was with God and the Word was God. And there just seems to be something that we have in common, and it has to do with the Word and myth. And, and yes, we have all these slivers of light in all these pieces, but there's a myth that's true.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking while you were reading all that. So I'm so glad you just went ahead and went there.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing that confounded. And I know we've said this here before, but that was the thing that confounded C.S. Lewis. He looked at all that and went, these are all just myths. And it took Tolkien and his friend talking to him late into the night one night to go, yes, but that doesn't mean one can't be absolutely all the way true.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes Lewis so believable in this is he didn't want to believe in God. And he, you know, so he'll say things like,
very reluctant, right?
Yeah.
I'm the most reluctant convert there ever has been.
Yeah. He was like, it was the most miserable person ever who kneeled and accepted the fact that there was a God. And then he didn't want to believe in Jesus. But by the time he'd finished taking a motorcycle ride with his brother to the zoo, when he got on, he didn't believe in him. And when he got off, he's like, I had to admit it. Jesus was real.
Wow.
So you don't even know what happened during that trip.
Yeah.
So those are the things where I kind of look at it and go, yep, been there. You'd have been embarrassed before to admit it, but here we are because you're faced with the reality. But and if you're reading this book in terms of a religious truth, you're not going to get it, but that's not exactly why he wrote it. He was kind of
not at all. I don't think so either.
He's just telling the story of the holiday.
These are just things that really interested me this time through as a Catholic person. But I can't tell you enough how it's just imbued with this mood and this wonderful feeling of Halloween, what Halloween was to kids, or what it was to me as a kid. You've got these eight boys running around following Mound Shroud, looking for Pip, and you know, Pip will run by. Mm-hmm. Pip will be a mummy, you know, in a pyramid or whatever, wherever he was. And I forgot what he was in Ireland.
There was a dog
that ran by. And they said that looked just like Pip, so they chase after him, you know, mm-hmm. and I just, you know, all that energy and it's just wonderful. Yeah.
Because it's deadly serious on the one hand, but it's a wonderful game and adventure on the other. And that's just how it is at that age.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. Things are fascinating.
I really liked the Irish section also. And I really liked the bit right before what you read where they're, I think maybe is his name pronounced Samhain?
Yeah, that could be.
Or something like that. Yeah. But basically, Samhain is depicted as an actual entity, an actual god, and he is going around, and if you're a sinner, he's going to kill you or turn you into a beetle or put you into a dog and then kill you. And so there's a scythe going around whooshing and everything, and so it's like, "You there," thundered the voice from above, "come back." "No, sir, thanks," said one, and then another. And so they're kind of, by him putting them in the place of this stuff really happening, you also kind of get that sense of, as a Catholic reading it, and he didn't cut the Christians any breaks. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But he's not cutting any Celts any breaks here either. So I'm going to just let him go on that one. But the thing I liked is you look at this and you go, "Boy," said Ralph, squinched up, balled up, feet against chest, eyes tight. "England is no place to be a sinner." That made me just laugh so much. But what you realize is some of the things that Christianity saved you from. I know a lot of people today would say that's exactly the kind of judgmental, horrible vision that Christians give you. But really, this is the kind of thing that Jesus and Christianity set a lot of people free from. Because what you hear a lot of times these days is the good, kind, wonderful pagans. Mm. Well, that's not always the case. And their vision of God was horrible sometimes, very absolute.
Right.
So I kind of liked seeing all the sides. You know, there's the people with their mummies and their dinners for them, but there's also this stuff too, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And you can't forget those parts.
No.
Yeah. That's one of the things that you do when you start talking about morality and without a moral absolute, you know, how can you decide what's better than something else? You know, if right. we're not all agreeing on what the absolute is, you know, we're all coming from different places.
And that's kind of part of the chaos right now that we're experiencing in just a lot of areas of our lives.
Sure.
I mean, heck, I can't. I can't even use, used to be, you know, you could write someone a note or talk to them or call them on the phone. And now it's like, do you use Twitter? Do you use Facebook? Do you use email? Do you call them on the phone? Do you text them?
Oh, man.
I can't even get a hold of somebody, much less, you know, talk about some kind of other absolute.
Wow. I know this is bouncing off into the bushes, but I saw what I thought was just a brilliant TV show.
Yeah.
It's called Black Mirror, which is an anthology show, a science fiction anthology show, not unlike The Twilight Zone. It's on Netflix, but just take a look at season 3, episode 1.
Okay.
And what it's about, I can't remember what the title is, but what it's about is a society that we're very, very, very close to in which a person rates other people. So the main character is a woman, and she has an interaction with a person at a store, and she sends him 5 stars, and his phone beeps and he sends her back 5 stars. So, but everybody's got a rating. So she's a 4.2.
Oh.
And she wants to get into an apartment complex that is only for 4.5s and better.
Dang it.
Yeah. So she's got to get that up there to a 4.5 because what she wants to be is the people that are in that apartment complex.
Right.
And it's really, really good. It makes you look at things like, what are we doing? Because we're not that far away. I remember there was an app that came out where people were supposed to rate each other on, and it really just fell flat. Nobody would use it.
Yeah, just everybody like, that's knew it too was
far.
Dangerous.
That's too far. But the thing is, how are we not doing that? You know, I myself have caught myself, you know, you do a tweet or something and you're like, I wonder if anybody liked it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
You go check.
Right. You go check. And then when you start to do stuff for that like, that's when you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we do it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even before the internet existed, but... that's just one of those things.
Yeah, that's part of being the popular people, or what will you do for peer approval?
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
It's always existed. It's just right now it's no, people can affect you who you don't even know. You know, you hear about people who will take it too far themselves, like you know, somebody who commits suicide because of people being mean to them on the internet or whatever.
Yeah, horrible.
And that's the same thing. It's just, but it's that thing too of the internet's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to use it, and how are we going to let ourselves be affected by it?
Right. Yep. It's good and bad both, just like everything else in life.
Right. You too can read a book that'll do bad. The same thing to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Or a TV show or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You bet. So, sorry about that aside.
No.
That was
interesting.
I saw that just the other day. So from there, is Notre Dame next? Notre Dame?
Well, the witches.
The witches, okay. The witches are next, and then Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Then the witches, then Notre Dame with the gargoyles.
Mm-hmm.
And
which
then,
I love. I love a good gargoyle.
Oh, doesn't everyone loves a gargoyle?
We have a cathedral here in Salt Lake City, and whenever I go there, I try to take a picture of the gargoyles that are sticking out of the sides of the cathedral in the corners. Love those things.
I know, they're just so. I don't know. It's just that, you know, bit of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when you find out that, you know, they had monsters and things in them, but they would also have things like, you know, the local baker who you didn't like, or the mayor way up where no one could see them. But
I love it.
They'll have water coming out of a terrible place.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it rains.
Too funny.
Yeah. But he did some interesting things with these. So when he would slow down and stop and take a look, he'd skitter across a big portion of history in order to get to something that would connect with the boys' costumes. So, you know, there are eight spots that he hits because each of the boys at one point will go, that's where my costume came from. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
The skeleton.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or even the, was it a hobo or a beggar? Where, you know, that was the going around in trick-or-treating, the first trick-or-treating in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and one was dressed as a gargoyle, and that was the Notre Dame.
Yeah, and so that's one of the sections where he slows down and takes several chapters to look at it, because Pip is a gargoyle, and you can hear him better when it rains.
Yeah.
You know, which I never thought of.
Mm-hmm. That is fun.
Because he's having to wait for the wind to make a noise.
So cool. Yeah, I love those details.
Mm-hmm.
So where is it that they end up?
They end up in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At, let me think, you know, hold on a second. Is it called, El Dia de los Muertos?
Oh, yeah.
The Day of the Dead.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've seen any pictures of this. I'll look, and although anybody, either of us could look, but we'll put some, or at least one, on the website, because it started off, I think, as something where you would go on All Saints Day, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, clean off your family tomb or your loved one's tombs, and you'd have a meal there and some candles and some marigolds, because orange is a lucky color, And you bake some skull cookies. And then, so that's part of the fun of it, too. You're eating the skull cookies.
Mm, yeah.
Or candies and things like that.
They're like sugar skulls.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And he placed one of his short stories that was definitely a horror story in that setting. I've never forgotten it.
Okay.
Yeah, an American couple who goes to Mexico.
Hmm.
And the wife is full of this dread of the Day of the Dead.
Huh.
That's all I'll say.
Wow.
But so I was really delighted when it turned up in this book. And of course, not a horror setting at all. It shows the love of the families that have come together to do this. And that's the bookend part with the Egyptian people feeding the souls of their dead.
Mm-hmm. You
know, putting out a meal for them. And then it's escalated into something where, you know, it's also almost a carnival feeling too. People dressing in costumes and things like that. And some Hispanic communities in the U.S. do it too. I don't know where exactly, but...
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Yeah, and that's interesting. So what I remember most about this chapter, I mean, the whole thing is just terrific.
It's wonderful.
But Mound Shroud strikes a deal with the boys.
And you start
to realize who Mound Shroud is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You always suspect, but then you realize, this person is extremely powerful.
Yeah, well, I started off thinking he was a vampire.
Yeah, I don't really know that I had a specific, you know, I know what he is, but again, the first time I saw it was the movie, so I never had the experience of not having seen the movie to do that. So, he's death himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's been showing them all kind of his own incarnations.
Right.
In different cultures, how they all depict himself. But the deal is a fascinating one. So Pip is very sick, and Mound Shroud's ready to take him, you know? And he says...
it's his time.
Right. He says, all right, well then, will each of you give 1 year from the end of your life, boys? And they have to make that decision. And again, just beautiful writing. I mean it, boys. 1 year, one precious year from the far-burned candle end of your life. With 1 year apiece, you can ransom dead Pipkin. And the boys are like, sure, why not? I mean, they're 11 and 12, right?
Well, and he says that to them. He says, you know, right now that seems like nothing.
Yeah.
You'll live a long life, but what about when you're this age?
Right.
When you're that. So he's being fair with them. He's not trying to trick them.
Yeah.
Or just use sentiment.
He does give an entire speech, you know.
Yeah.
Some of you are going to be 71, but you're going to die at 70.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you might live to be 86, must cough up your ghost at 85.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And he goes on and on about it.
He's right.
Think, boys, think. Then speak. So, yeah.
And like, they you do must think be about sure. it.
They do think about it, and they say yes.
As fast as possible.
Right.
He says, yet what else could they do? Only swim out from the shore and save the drowning boy before he sank a last time into a frightening dust.
Mm.
Which is what you want to think you do, whether, I mean, a year from your life, even at my age, you go, oh, that seems like it's pretty far in the future. Okay.
Yep.
The instinct should be to save the one you love.
Mm. Yep. Right, and they do. They do love Pipkin, and that's kind of what you were talking about with the relationship between boys.
Right.
This special thing about friendship between boys of that age.
Mm-hmm.
Beautifully captured.
Well, and also that idea of what it means to sacrifice part of yourself to save someone else. And this is the part where I don't know if it was intentional or not, since... you looked up Ray Bradbury.
Yeah.
We can talk about his religion in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, when you look at a sacrifice of part of your life, you can give, you know, what is it? No man can give anything greater than, you know, his life for his friend.
Yeah.
And that in their small way is what they're doing. They are all in that sense Christ in a very small way. They're choosing it.
Yeah, they sure are.
And gladly. I mean, they stop and think, but they're like, it's worth it for him. We love him. So we've got that Christ symbol at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's because it's so basic to story. That's what you need to have a heroic moment. And that kind of goes back to the Joseph Campbell and the myth and everything, which is why I personally think that Ray Bradbury would have put it in there.
Well, he was certainly familiar with all of it, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it just works. It makes sense for the story. They've done all this already. Why wouldn't they do this for Pip now? But looking at it as Catholics, I look at it and go, but it's the Christian thing to do.
Yeah, right.
Now, you looked him up and you said he's not.
Yeah, I looked him up. So I have here in front of me Wikipedia, and it says he was raised Baptist by his parents, who were themselves infrequent churchgoers.
Oh, okay.
As an adult, Bradbury considered himself a delicatessen religionist who resisted categorization of his beliefs and took guidance from both Eastern and Western faiths. He felt that his career was, quote, a God-given thing, and I'm so grateful, so, so grateful. The best description of my career as a writer is at play in the fields of the Lord.
I do love that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's neat.
Of course, I do also. I'm Catholic. Mm-hmm. It was like, but if you pick nothing, I mean, if you pick everything, then you're kind of picking nothing also.
Right,
it's the spiritual, not religious idea.
Right.
Because is that so, and again, I'm not talking about Ray Bradbury because I don't know about him, but just as a general idea, that means you're off the hook for anything you don't want to think about or take care of in terms of religion.
True. Yeah, that is so very true. Yeah. Yeah, that's profound right there. That's something that I've felt too in my past.
Yeah.
It's all of the above is none of the above. That's well put.
Well, I'd rather have an honest Christian or whatever who says, I'm struggling with these issues, so I may not observe this particular thing right now because I'm struggling with it and I can't buy into it, but I'm still going to keep struggling with it. I'm going to see how it falls into line. And they're willing to subject themselves emotionally and mentally to what it takes to deal with it.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's just like, you know, dating forever and never marrying.
Yeah.
Or getting divorce after divorce. I mean, and I understand you can change religions, and I get all this because we've all had our various examinations of things. But yeah, I just, if you're going to be honest, you have to wrestle with something, and to wrestle with something, you have to choose and commit to something.
Yeah. Now, Robert Barron, he had a, Bishop Robert Barron, right?
Yes. Yeah.
He had, there's a podcast, one of his, I think it's called Word on Fire. Very recently, there was some type of a survey done of why youth are leaving Christianity. It wasn't Catholicism specifically, but they were talking about the reasons, and they were going through some of the philosophical reasons. And one of them was, one of the most common things said was, well, you know, all religions are okay. And it's that, you know, exactly what we're saying here. All religions are okay. One's not better than the other one. So, you know, none of the above is what I choose. And yeah. I'm still mulling over what he said, had to say about that. Because he said, if this was really important to you, you would make a decision. He said that you don't talk that way about anything else in your life.
That's true.
This is the only thing that's acceptable to talk that way about it. And I'm really thinking hard about that one.
That's true. Now, is that he does a homily podcast?
Yeah, he does a homily podcast.
But this is a half hour discussion or
exactly,
something.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was with Brandon Vaught.
Yeah, yep. And I think it usually is with Brandon, who is also very good and thoughtful.
Yeah, and you've met him, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I well, say hi for me.
I know. I still remember. And I okay, this is my little brush with fame because I'm just like, I was walking by somewhere and he jumped to his feet and came over and went, "Julie, happy Catholic. I'm Brandon Vaught." And I was like, "Brandon, you knew who I was?"
Ooh. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, I love it. That's cool.
That's how I felt.
That's cool. Yeah, I listened to his, I actually bought and listened to his How to Read More. And I found it very, very engaging and very helpful. You know, having read as much as I have, it's like, that was really helpful. It sort of added a new depth to what I do.
Interesting.
But yeah, I really liked what he had to say.
Well, everything I've read of his, and granted, I didn't buy his How to Read. I felt like I'm almost at book 200 for the year, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're doing fine.
I'm probably not getting everything out of it I could, Brandon. Yeah. I'm just saying, I know you could make me a better reader, but he wrote a book about, that I've thought of us doing when we're doing a religious book, about the saints and social justice.
Oh, really?
That was just terrific.
Yep, Saints and Social Justice. A guide, yeah, a guide to changing the world is the subtitle.
Yeah, and it is really good, especially since somebody like me hears the word social justice, and I understand it's a legit thing, but the people who tend to write books about it are the ones who tend to go in a direction I don't really feel like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, just they get too touchy-feely, and let's all be nice, super nice to each other. I'm not against being nice, but anyway. this book was eminently practical, and it was really engaging in looking at each of these saints, and it also was very good in saying, yes, but this was a saint. They went to, you know, Molokai and lived with the lepers or whatever they did, but in applying it to your own life.
Yeah.
It's really a great book, and I wish would write another book about some more saints or something like that.
Yeah, so, nice. Yeah, I found just a little blurb here. It says, "The church has always taught certain undeniable truths that can and should affect our society. But over the years, these teachings have been distorted, misunderstood, and forgotten. With the help of 14 saints, it's time we reclaim Catholic social teaching and rediscover it through the lives of those who best lived it out." Nice.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Yes, because in reading and listening to that summary, that's the thing when I was saying we're too nice to each other, talk about not being well-spoken and not having it together, I just wasn't able to articulate properly the thing of reading distorted views in books where things are being put forward and you're just going, this isn't exactly right.
Which and is Brandon's book what does this a book lot does.
Brandon's Sorry. Book does a lot to correct that. So, yeah.
Well, what I was about to say there is, as I rudely interrupted you, but
no.
It's because I got excited because this book is an example of that. There is a slight distortion to it.
The Halloween tree?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of annoyed me. But
it's,
you know.
Yeah, but it's part of why I was so excited to do this podcast with you in the first place, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's sort of what we're doing here because, you know, we're reading glimpses of truth all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as we try to reason through it and make sense of it ourselves by talking to each other, it's just infinitely worthwhile, in my opinion. So
you're right.
Thank
it
you
is
again.
For me.
It is for
you're
me.
Right.
Yeah. And greatly that, appreciate your time.
Well, I love you too, buddy.
And I do love you, yes.
Virtual hug.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you make an excellent point because that's the reason why we could talk about this book and I go, he says some things, you know, I get this feeling of a judgy vibe about Christians a little bit in here, which you didn't get. But even if I do get it, it's okay. The whole book is all right. It doesn't have to all be perfect for me to like it.
Yeah.
Or talking about the witch, which everybody but me, well, no, maybe the Kurt Jester, Jeff Miller, also didn't love it,
yeah.
I think, from his comments. But the thing is you don't have to absolutely love it all the way in order to get those splinters of light.
Yeah.
That is shining.
Yeah.
On
and
us.
There's an opposite thing to this too, or a companion piece to it. You know, I have sat in classrooms full of adults at a high school, you know, for, you know, before a school session starts or something, parent-teacher conferences or whatever. But I have sat with other parents who would refuse to have their child read the book that the English class is reading.
Oh.
You know, and I just think that that's horrible. Why
would they do that?
Just because it's just, you know, that's the other side of the coin, I think, to what we're doing is shutting it all out.
Because, oh, total censorship.
Because the Halloween tree says, you know, you can say that it says that Christianity and all these other mythologies are all one thing and they're equal.
Mm-hmm.
That would offend people enough to say, well, I don't want my child to read that. I just don't think that that's okay. I think that you need to allow ideas to get through, and then you reason with those ideas, and then you make your decisions and then move on.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, and this makes me think of two things. One is that, you know, Halloween has this problem, and we've discussed this before, is that you get the people who go, oh, no, it's referring to devils and this and that, and we're not going to have anything to do with it, which is also very absolutist. And it allows you, first of all, to have no playing fun. And the other thing is you're taking the devil too seriously. Laugh at him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like that.
He doesn't like that at all.
No. And then the other thing is, I'm sorry, have you read the Bible? It is full of the worst people and the worst societies and the worst situations and the most devil worship and horrible things ever. But with God's help and with God's grace and our cooperation, everybody who wants to gets what they need.
Mm.
It may not be the easiest, but they get it, you know. So you look at Abraham and, I don't know, Joshua, and, you know, those are the good ones. But even I think of Jacob and Esau. You know, Jacob's the trickster, and he gets everything. And he still, because he cheated his brother when he's taking his entourage back home, he has them all staged behind him in case Esau's showing up with his 100, 300 men or whatever it is, ready to kill him. And what does Esau do? He falls on his neck and cries and says, "Welcome home, brother." And nobody ever talks about Esau, and he's not the favored one, but guess what he did? And I bet it's with cooperation and God's grace, because he was wronged legally and emotionally by his mother and his brother. That stuff's all in there, but you can't have it without the crappy stuff to look at, because we're all sinners. We all do this stuff to each other.
Yeah.
And a book that you might disapprove of, it might show you that very clearly.
Yeah. Like Life of Brian, for example.
Yeah.
Yes. What a good movie. Definitely. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that went into an interesting place. You know, we always start this podcast with, well, you know, I'm not sure where God's going to take us today. This may last 15 minutes.
Especially this one, which is such a light little book.
Yeah,
seemingly.
Yeah. You know, I knew nothing more than it's so beautifully written. You know, I just wanted to read it all to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. And there's one more passage that I would love to read. Very short
please,
one. Yes.
Please.
I know that Bradbury is a Moby Dick fan. He wrote a script for it and everything.
Oh, yes.
But there's this one part right after they all agreed to give their year, is this paragraph. And I felt this deep down. He says, "They felt something like a cage of birds let out of their chests and bodies and flying off invisible. They saw but did not see the years they gave as gifts wing off round the world to settle somewhere in good payment for strange debts." My gosh, is there a better sentence ever, a couple sentences ever written? And it just reminds, you know, in Moby Dick, he says, "If my chest had been a cannon, I would have shot my heart upon it." And the first time I read those words, I felt that. I just felt it. It was just amazing. But this had the same feel.
I actually know that from Wrath of Khan, but you know, that's fine.
Right. Which is the first time I heard it too, I'm sure. Yeah. But,
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And the last thing I have, if you don't mind, is
no,
when the book is at the end and Tom is looking at the house that he's on his porch, and he's looking at Mr. Moundshroud's house across the ravine, and he says, he thinks, Mr. Moundshroud, who are you? And Mr. Moundshroud, way up there on the roof, sent his thoughts back. I think you know, boy. I think you know. Will we meet again, Mr. Moundshroud? Many years from now, yes, I'll come for you. And a last thought from Tom. Oh, Mr. Moundshroud, will we ever stop being afraid of nights and death? And the thought returned. When you reach the stars, boy, yes, and live there forever, all the fears will go and death himself will die. Tom listened, heard, and waved quietly. Mr. Moundshroud, far off, lifted his hand. And of course, you know, you can take that two ways. One is he also wrote, you know, science fiction type fantasy. Yeah. But of course, as a Christian, I just looked at that and thought, that's beautiful. That's when, because Christians, we go through death, but we don't fear it, or we shouldn't. It's a natural human thing to fear it, but we don't need to. Jesus has killed death for us. Right. He's waiting.
Yeah, there's such a double meaning there. You know, Bradbury's always talking about reaching for the stars and and going into space and stuff, but he was never science-y. You know, even like in the Martian Chronicles, he writes about rockets. You know, it's not it's not about the science at all, even though it's shelved in science fiction. So to read that line, definitely wouldn't surprise me at all if he meant the double.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
He was a smart and wise man.
Both places, this guy.
Just because I was saying that about his, you know, the religion thing doesn't mean I don't really respect him.
Oh yeah, agreed. Yeah.
So this
whole thing reminded me a little bit of one of my favorite Bradbury stories, which it wouldn't surprise me at all that I mentioned in the other one of the other two times we talked. But there's one called The Emissary. And I have an audio version that he read, and it's something that I had since high school. It was when this book, The Collected Stories of Ray Bradbury, came out. But there was also a cassette version that I remember way back then from Walden Tapes.
Oh, you know,
from Walden Books. I remember buying it for Walden Books. Actually, I don't remember if it's a Walden tape or not, but I've been into audiobooks since way back then. It was always been one of my favorite things.
You were a pioneer.
I was a pioneer, yeah. So, but this story, The Emissary, also has a sick boy. And it's just a short story. And it starts off, this boy is ill. I mean, he's so ill that he can't get out of bed. He's not allowed to go outside. But he has a dog. And he sends his dog out into the world, and his dog brings things back. And then he writes a note and puts it on the dog's collar and says, hey, if you find this dog, come visit me. I would love to see you. And the dog brings back this woman. And she's an older woman, and they end up being friends. But then one day the woman stops coming by. And the boy is just distraught. And I won't say any more. Go find the story. It is a horror story. It is a Halloween story called The Emissary.
As you were telling me, as you were saying, I was like, wait a minute, I know this story. Is this the story I was thinking of? Yes, it's a horror story. It's That's a wonderful right. story.
It's a really great story.
And I love the boy and his dog in that story. And you're right. It's how could he evoke that time and feeling and place so well, even for those of us who were never, we weren't his age.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You feel like you were there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really perfect.
Right, right. And I got to see him speak one time.
Oh,
At the University of Arizona when I was in college there, he came. And I watched it, and I still remember it really clearly because that was kind of, you know, I loved the guy anyway.
Right.
But his main message was, don't let him take away your stuff. He described how one day he decided he was an adult and he threw away all his comic books. He threw away all his stuff. And from now on, he was going to be an adult. And he was just completely miserable. It took him a long time to realize that this was part of him, and to be okay with that part of him was what needed to happen so that he could live his life.
Yeah.
And become who he was. He couldn't have done it, you know, if that had stayed as was, if he had fought that his whole time, wanting to be what everybody else is saying is an adult. Not unlike getting 5 stars, right? Not unlike trying to be what everybody else wants you to be. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all one thing, Julie. It's all one big thing.
Really, really is.
But what a wonderful talk. I really enjoyed it back then.
Oh, and, I bet.
Yeah. All these years. You know, I'm 157 now, so that was a long time ago.
Mr. Mountrud, is that you?
Mountrud. But yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I'm glad you picked this. I have to admit, I was coming into this thinking, I don't know what we're going to talk about. Great book.
Yeah.
But wow.
But we did it.
That's why it takes two of us.
And this will be coming out on Halloween. So happy Halloween, everybody.
Oh, yes. Happy Halloween.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So what's next? Let's find out.
Oh.
The Intouchables. Not the Untouchables. Frosty.
No.
The Intouchables.
Well, I have never seen it called Untouchables, though I believe that would be the English translation, but this is a French movie.
Well, the Untouchables was a movie with Kevin Costner.
Yes, and that was also quite a good movie, but
it's not this one, right.
No, this one's got that French guy who everybody knows, because if you ever see a popular French movie, he's in it. And you'll know who I mean when you see him.
All right, cool.
And it's also got Omar Sy. I don't know if anybody knows him, if that's the right way to say his name, but he's amazing. And this is his first movie, so.
Wonderful. I am really looking forward to it.
Yep. Can't wait to talk to you about that one.
All right. Wonderful.
Yeah. So happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful
candy
day.
Corn.
Yep. And happy All Saints Day. Do you say that?
Happy All Saints? Yes, we don't say it, but we should, right? Thank you for getting a Catholic on me. I was going to go eat a bunch of candy, but no.
No. Eat your candy.
Okay.
All Saints Day is tomorrow.
Okay. Oh, thank goodness.
All right. Have a good one, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.